You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. I'm a little annoyed at comic book writer Greg Rucka because this was my idea, damn it. I had notes and everything. I mean, they didn't include getting a deal to write the actual screenplay for said adaptation of my comic book and get Charlize Theron, the actual physical real life goddess, to play a character who might as well be a goddess. But hey, you know, I guess I can't begrudge him that his plan turned out probably better than mine would have, which at best I can picture community theater. But The Old Guard has been picked up by Netflix in this era of COVID. They end up co-producing this moderately priced superhero adjacent pick being directed by Gina Prince Blythewood. We're here to discuss The Old Guard, which I know I liked considerably more than I thought I would, even with the given that Charlize Theron in anything is going to, you know, at least add a star and a half to the final proceedings and rating. But joining me, I've got Jordan.
Yes, hello. And this reminds me of the time I lived for Prohibition.
Bradley.
Hello.
And Hunter.
Hello.
See, the only person here who even arguably could have lived through Prohibition is probably Bradley, and that's because he pretends like he's younger than me. But come on, guys. I mean, listen to this guy.
Listen to the Greyhound review.
I used to drive trucks that had the word Prohibition on them that I'd paint myself 20 years after it ended.
Did you see that photo of him where he's wearing an onion on his belt? I mean, I get it was the style, but...
Like five B's for an onion, you'd say.
I didn't put up with Al Capone's shit for this.
Fun fact, Boardwalk Empire is based on Bradley's life, in case you didn't know.
As I said, this is directed by Gina Prince Blythewood, who this is a sharp turn for her in her career, having directed before the movies Love and Basketball, Secret Life of Bees, and Beyond the Lights, and going, you know what? I want to make a kick-ass, very action, violent superhero movie is definitely not the direction anyone pictured her taking at this point. Although, apparently, she was the first in line before the project was canceled to direct that Silver Sable Black Cat movie that was being developed by Sony as a sort of Spider-Man universe spinoff. So she teams up with a solid cast here, the idea being that there are a group of people who have been immortals for, in some cases, thousands of years. And only every once in a long while does a new one just kind of appear, who literally cannot die. Anything you do to them, they heal and they come back to life. Immortality is not an option. It's the way they have to live their life, the oldest of which that any of them know of is Charlize Theron, who goes all the way back. She said in an interview she was like 6,000 years old, but that's completely incorrect because she says she's Scythian, which would make her around somewhere between 2,000 and 2,300 years old. Yes, I'm a nerd.
I remember in the comic, it's like, I'm like something 2,000 plus.
But she's the leader of this little group that have been on the fringes of society throughout history, going around trying to do good as best as they could tell what that was at any point with their very advanced military skills, which they would be after constant practice in hundreds or thousands of years, and their ability to just flat out not die. She's joined in this particular group of people by the, you know, I think deeply underrated Matthias Schoenaerts, who I always really like when I see in stuff. I don't think he's really caught on in America as much yet, although he's been in a few films that played big over here, like A Bigger Splash, The Danish Girl, and Red Sparrow. But he always felt like one of those guys who's got a bigger career in front of him, as well as Marwan Kenzari, who played Jafar in the live-action Aladdin. And Luca Marinelli as Nicky. I didn't see it, but that FX miniseries about the abduction of John Paul Getty III, he was one of the main characters
great.
In there.
Yes, he's great.
Was it?
Yeah, he was really good at it.
Those last two, Joe and Nicky, are a gay couple, and they are delightful.
Yes.
And the way it's handled is delightful in a way I would not have expected at all, this degree of nuance. But anyway, Chiwetel Ejiofor plays this guy who's basically discovered and studied the existence of these people and has made a deal with a rich billionaire tech magnate played by Dudley from the Harry Potter films, Harry Melling. Stephen Merrick is the character.
He's Pharma Bro. Martin Shkreli.
That's who he's playing, basically. And this guy wants to, when he's found that, oh, well, these are guys are real. Well, I want you to capture all of them because I'm going to find a way to steal whatever it is that makes them immortal and be able to sell it, of course. It's pretty simple plot, all things considered. The thrust of it is they discover for the first time in hundreds of years, there's a new one, Nile, who is in the military, and she gets her throat cut and then it immediately heals. And she's like, what the fuck is going on? She's played by Kiki Layne, who just recently in 2018 had a huge breakout role as the female lead from the movie If Beale Street Could Talk. Moving on to doing this now, she's also going to be in Coming to America 2, which is just Coming to Number 2 America. Anyway, mm-hmm. Who cares? Yeah. So they go and they have to team up with her and convince her all this is real and this is the life that now she has no choice to be a part of, and wouldn't you rather spend it with other people like you? Well, meanwhile, people are regularly trying to hunt them down, even though Chiwetel Ejiofor's character, James Copley, is telling them, look, I don't think you realize how hard this is actually going to be. These people are not easy to capture, and that proves to be true. So this is essentially a series of action scenes that are interspersed with a fish-out-of-water plot and a lot of people being remorseful about their past. And I would say if I have one major criticism of this, I would have liked to have seen much more about their pasts.
Yeah, I agree completely. Yeah.
I think that's fair. You get a decent amount of Andy's past, but I really wanted to get more of Joe and Nikki's past in particular. They definitely like allude to it. You can almost hear the carnival music for all the crap they're balancing here. But they do a pretty good job of highlighting multiple things. When you find out about Andy's, why she's so bitter, as far as someone that she used to know. Somebody that she used to... Sorry. Anyways, but...
God damn it.
Find out, thank you. But when you find out why, it's a really brutal thing. And one of the first things I always point out about Christianity, as far as how they treated, quote, witches, it's like, oh, that is a very grim thing.
Just to clarify, how they treated people they wanted to get rid of.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Witches aren't real.
But I really appreciated that. This movie doesn't shy away from the violent nature of humanity throughout so many different times, and I really appreciate that. So it kind of works as a pseudo-tweaked history lesson, too, at points, which was a pleasant surprise.
I actually think this is a really damn good adaptation. I think my only problem with this movie is, yes, some of the character backstories aren't so fully realized. I mean, yeah, we get Andy, and I actually quite enjoy the tweaks they made from the comic to the movie as far as her backstory, as far as why she is bitter. This is a damn fun movie. The comic actually had some really great, well-drawn action by Leandro Fernandez, and I absolutely thought Gina Price translated it so perfectly. The action sequences, they're actually pretty heavily character-based. Many action scenes, you can get a sense of who the character is because usually they're so singular. But this movie, there are action sequences with the full group, the main group together. And it actually balances telling so many multiple stories between each of them. It's fantastic. And honestly, this is kind of a new favorite modern action classic for me. I enjoyed the hell out of this movie.
In terms of the action, the cinematographer, who apparently has worked repeatedly with this director, but on, like I said, more serious drama films,
yeah.
I could have knocked me over with a feather when it turned out they knew better than your average actual have done lots of action movies Hollywood director how to film an action scene.
Yeah, we actually get to see everything. There's no cut every 5 seconds.
You've got a genuine plus already just having Charlize Theron as your main character in the fight scenes, because she genuinely not only knows how to fight and has, I believe, a couple different black belts, is dedicated to that craft of being a very solid action star. She's very good at it. And, you know, I mean, that's going to make it a little bit easier. But yeah, I was deeply impressed with the way they pulled off the action.
You look at this and you say, wait, that's the same person who did Love and Basketball? And I love that movie. It's a great drama.
I basketball that movie.
Good God. So I think that's what's so cool about this, is that if you go back and watch Love and Basketball and you see, you know, If Beale Street Could Talk, which if you have not seen, you really need to. But you could see in those movies that the potential was there, because those are just beautifully shot films. especially if Beale Street could talk. I have to give Marwan Kenzari so much credit because I remember watching Aladdin and I thought he was so goddamn flat. I was like, oh man, I'm really bummed out that you're Jafar. Watching this, I was like, he is charming. He is sweet. He is incredibly efficient as a fighter, as all of them are. And there's a scene, a couple monologue scenes that I really enjoyed.
Marwan Kenzari, I honestly forgot he played Jafar. I also did really like him here. Two other performances I do want to bring up. Mathis, he plays Booker. I'm going to fuck up his last name. I just know it. He really does do a good job. He has a great arc in of itself.
Are you talking about Matthias Schoenaerts?
Yes, Schoenaerts. Oh, okay. Hey, I got it. Okay, thank you. And
you got it by repeating me.
Sorry. It's how I learn. And honestly, I also did, as usual, really enjoy Chiwetel Ejiofor. He actually has a pretty nice layered performance here. He actually makes the Copley character from the comics a lot more interesting. Like, that's a good upgrade. Copley is way better here than in the comic.
I mean, he's much more explored here than he is in the comics, most certainly. Decidedly more explored. I mean, there are differences. Like I said, one of the things that bugged me about this, I didn't even realize how much it bugged me until I went back and read the comic after I saw the movie. Went, oh, the comic spends a lot more time looking at shit that happened to these guys in the past. And obviously that's a budgetary constraint, but I kept going, you know what made this feel not like a cinematic movie? Is that stuff isn't there. Yeah. It's so alluded to that you go, oh, they're about to show this, and they don't. And that gives it a television feel, which there's nothing inherently wrong with. This is a really solid television movie, but it never doesn't feel like a television movie to me. And I think that was the big dividing line. This is in response to what you brought up, Hunter, earlier about Joe and Nikki's characters, the gay couple in here. There's a sequence that literally just by the strength of the performance and the dialogue moved me to tears because it was so unexpected and beautiful, where this asshole character is like, who's kidnapped the two of them along with a bunch of other Black Ops soldiers, makes some crack about like, oh, what is he, your boyfriend? Yusuf Al-Kassani gives this speech about, like, my boyfriend, and starts talking about literally how much this person actually means to them. And it's a gorgeously written speech, and it's incredibly perfectly performed. I actually read an interview with the other actor, Nikki, who's playing Versus, and said, it took everything I had not to start openly sobbing while he was giving the speech because he did such a good job of it.
He loves him so much that he's gonna get on a soapbox and say it before, you know, they wreck some shit. And it works.
Yeah, it's not like he has magic rainbow powers or something, you know?
Although, I kind of want to see that now.
No, you don't. You don't want to see that. That would be exploitation right there. Fine, that's what I'm saying. Ponies can have magic rainbow powers. That's it.
Well, that's where it also, love is mostly seen as love when it's honest and genuine like this. And yeah, I teared up as well. And, you know, I looked at my wife. I watch movies with my spouse. I said, can we pause this and talk about what we just saw and maybe something else? Beautiful scene.
I wonder what your wife thinks of me then, because I always hear from friends who have similar situations where they watch stuff with their wives or girlfriends that I give them to watch, and their wives and girlfriends are regularly very upset with me.
No.
Because of some of the stuff that their significant others get handed off to watch. So
hey, she liked Greyhound too. None of the foreign stuff about the ghosts, but yeah.
Well, let's go to final thoughts. Bradley, get us started.
All right. I really liked the action scenes in this, and that's honestly why I watched it, because I know Charlize Theron is low-key action hero. She has a career on IMDb, you can see, where she always kicks ass. Furiosa is probably one of the best action heroes in the past decade, easily top three. And the teamwork they have during their action made me so happy. The only thing missing from the action scene was a villain watching their teamwork, saying nope, dropping his gun and running away. That would have made it perfect for me. I liked the plot okay. I think whenever you tell a story about immortals, it kind of falls flat for me. Because any immortal going, you don't understand humanity. It's garbage. It's like, well, yeah, I've lived longer than 3 months in humanity. I know this. What, don't you have like a real epiphany for me, oh, grand immortal? And they usually don't. I know this was more or less a fun action film, and I really enjoyed it. I'm going to give this 7 spinny hands from axe swinging out of 10 choreographed fight scenes.
Jordan?
Yeah, I honestly think this movie is a new modern action classic. I will stand by that. It is so brilliantly shot. And again, it just does something so many modern action films don't do. And that, yes, you actually do see what's going on. Telling a character story, it tells multiple character stories in several action sequences brilliantly. You see the action, you feel the emotion, and it's great. Charlize Theron is incredible. The acting overall really is solid, and I think Greg Rucka did a good job adapting his script, and Gina was fantastic in directing this. Cannot highly recommend this enough, and I kind of do want to see more. So I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 badass axes.
Hunter?
First off, the fact Bradley gave this the same rating as Greyhound makes me want to burn all the Canadian bacon in the world.
It's just called bacon here.
It's not bacon. Anyways, but a couple things we didn't bring up. Kiki Layne, there's a scene where she does get her throat slashed, and the way that she's treated because of that just breaks your fucking heart. I remember going, wow. The music in this, we didn't really mention, is great. There's a couple songs by Skylar Grey and Ruel, who are two of my favorite music artists, that fit perfectly with some of the action scenes. Charlize Theron, her floor for stuff, I don't think people really give her enough credit for the range that she has, and I thought everyone here worked so well together. This is like The Losers if it was, you know, a good adaptation. I thought this was incredibly well done. There is a mid-credit stinger, which I would definitely recommend you watch. I'm going to give this 9.5 awesome deaths using a car out of 10.
See, for me, this falls down mainly just because of either A, budgetary limitations, or B, just timidity, possibly, by this director who's never made a movie like this and even trying to get to do the scenes that this film kind of requires to make it feel more than just a television movie. And it is an excellent television movie. I don't think this is a new action classic, but I think it's a minor classic. It's like one of those films, like, what's that one with the gun kata in it?
Equilibrium.
That's not a major action classic, but it's a minor action classic.
I love Equilibrium.
This is on kind of the same level as that for me. And there's no numerous ways in here in which you can tell this isn't quite as good as it could be. There's a betrayal at one point in here that's handled in a way that felt like the director was honestly uncomfortable at even being part of the plot. They have very little interest in doing much with it. And it doesn't really play out well in parts with the actors either. It's a third act moment in when things should be more tense than before, and I just never believed it, and I never really believed that things were as tense as the film wants you to believe that they actually are. There's also the introduction of this character halfway through the damn film, that they're like, yeah, I guess they're still alive somewhere. You're like, gee, I wonder if that's going to play into a sequel setup. And sure enough, a coda informs us that it will. If you're interested in knowing ahead of time about that, there is in fact a sequel comic book series that I believe Rucka just finished writing that is out that surrounds what happens next. And I can only presume, considering that this film has been, to all reports, performing quite well for Netflix, there will be a sequel. All the principals signed on to do another one, which I'm glad about. Yeah. I'll definitely watch another one. There's so much to like here. The characters are great. They're just great enough that I want to know lots more about them. And like I said, a falling of this film is that we don't get to know anywhere near as much as we'd actually like to. But that still says a lot about how cool they are anyway. I mean, immortals are generally boring. I mean, that's because they're bored. who wouldn't be? I'm always like, what do you talk about after like the first 700 years? These actors all find a way to both get that sense of just being tired and also not anywhere near ready to die at the same time, just ready to keep on doing what they're doing. I like that the character of Chiwetel Ejiofor, James Copley, gives it a background of what they do is actually important.
Yes, I love that.
It creates backstory for this that I'll say for the 18th time in this review, I wish we had actually seen more of Show Us, Don't Tell Us. But I'm sure that if they make a follow-up, it's going to be a lot more expensively made than this one is, and we'll follow up on a lot of that stuff, or at least it goddamn well better. I did thoroughly enjoy this. I would thoroughly recommend it. Great action scenes, cool use of music, you're absolutely right. Great villain death, by the way, yes. Like primary villain, when they finally kill him, it's awesome. Yeah, this is pretty solid stuff. I'm gonna give it a 7.5 out of 10 times. I kept expecting them to seriously have a conversation about which Stephen King novel was the best, because only immortals could have read them all.
That is true. And I will say, this movie contains the best visualization of what 2020 is, and that is Charlize Theron just casually chugging a bottle of vodka.
So I won't spoil who it happens to, but there is a neck break scene that's one of my favorites in the last decade that caught me so off guard. I was like, holy crap. Like, I actually had to pause it. Because my jaw was just, my mouth was just hanging open.
The way you said that, it's like, are you ready for Hunter's neck break show? It's right. The neck breaker.
Yeah, it's my wrestling
this week
podcast.
We'll be looking at the top 5 neck breaks that took place in the snow.
I'd watch that. Why not?